It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey. God Journey. Somebody live in the studio audience.
Yeah, she's got a bow too.
Yeah, ooh, Abby's joined us now. She's been here a month.
She's doubled in size since I've seen her.
I posted a little picture on Facebook of her. She was Sarah sent it to me when I was in Austin over the weekend, a couple weekends ago now, but last weekend as we record this. But I had her send me a picture of Abby every day because I just wanted to miss my pup.
Oh, there you go.
She sent one of her laying with her using Sheba's rear end as a pillow.
Oh.
And she was looking at it.
Beautiful.
I'm going to womp you. But, so I really think about fellowship on it, about how, you know, fellowship is just another finding somebody older, knows the ropes, hanging around, and if you're older, trying not to bite someone's head off when they're doing something weird. So we're enjoying this little pup becoming part of our house at home, and yeah, and the big dog's hopping around. So
yeah, our big dog is the pup. The older dog needs some help.
Your 200-pound pup.
He still thinks he's a lap dog. It's hilarious. He comes near the couch.
Yeah.
And he puts his head on. Pretty soon it's his shoulder on. And then he sits half his butt on. And you're just going like, exactly what do you think you're doing?
Yeah. We're going to be the dog journey again if we keep going down this road. But yeah.
Well, you got to give something for the dyslexic people.
Yeah. Okay. But as we wake this morning, I'm actually out on Vancouver Island.
Well, how is it?
I don't know yet. I'm not quite there.
It's beautiful up there, man.
I'm going. This is my third trip out to Vancouver Island, actually, to hang out with brothers and sisters in the area. And it's about an hour north of Victoria.
Sweet.
Not far from a town I've been in a couple of times, but the folks there don't know anything about the other folks, and those folks didn't know anything about those folks. And so I'm going to go up there next weekend. It's just some people that want to have more of this conversation about what it means to live.
That's
loved
awesome.
And help others do the same. So
that's beautiful country. We used to always go up to a place called Cortez Island, way up
there. Oh, yeah, out in the sound, yeah.
Way up. It's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty stuff. Unfortunately, I'm not getting the ferry to go across this time. I'm flying straight into Victoria. I like the ferry rides through those whole islands. That's really
they're a blast.
A pretty ride. But not doing that, airlifting out of San Francisco and dropping into Victoria. So I'll be having fun next weekend, I think.
Well, bless your travels there, brother.
Thank you. I hope not to get any hurt, anybody.
You're missing the snowstorms, huh?
I'm not. Yeah, I hope. It snows there.
What do you think about what's going on in the world?
You
There's
know,
a lot that's going on.
This is why I hate recording podcasts early, because no matter what we say now, that's 10, 12 days away.
I think it's going to be still boiling.
Oh, it's going to be boiling, but you're not sure what's going to come of it. But there's awful lot of unrest in the Arab Empire, I guess.
Well, it just looks like a way to go social media. It just seems like people are just saying, I'm tired of living under the rule of somebody else. And you just go like, golly, what's that going to look like?
Particularly if the rule's unjust. And what the social media has done, which is, I think, kind of incredible, it has empowered individuals over nation states. And the whole, you know, Osama bin Laden things. It's not one guy goes to war, and because of the way they can kind of be on, then you got Assange and his WikiLeaks thing, and he makes decisions that are actually putting governments in disarray. The sense of power is really shifting away. And an individual in the whole social media, or lots of individuals in the social media environment, can become incredibly destructive.
Yeah. Being this far away from what's going on, you just end up going like, golly, I don't even know if what we're getting is the truth.
Well, I can promise you it's not.
No, I know. But just the challenge of going like, golly, man, in light of what we talked about last time, it's like, I'm not there. I don't know. I think this could be good. I don't know.
Well, you don't know until you know the outcome.
Yeah.
But a lot of these things, you know what's there is not great. What's already in power isn't great. But then you get this whole revolt going. We end up with the Taliban in power, or do you end up with, you just don't know.
Well, I wouldn't like that. I don't think that's a good outcome, but that says us over here in the U.S. going like, I was watching some of the commentary and I'm going like, how bizarre is it that here we are over in the U.S. and we've got our little pundits all talking about, you know, like our vested interest in what happens in Egypt as if we have a right to define for them what's going on. And you're just going like, I bet that plays very different on the receiving end.
Well, I think only pundits are doing that. Mostly our government saying, you know what, the Egyptians got to sort this out. And there's some flack that maybe they're not doing enough to back the Egyptian regime. But, you know, Mubarak has been a great friend to the U.S., but he's not been a great ruler for Egypt, evidently.
Yeah, we backed a tyrant for a while.
Which we've done that before.
That doesn't turn out so great.
You think the Naira just stays in your pocket for a while? It's all good till the population goes, okay, we're done with this. And so I think it's obviously the world is incredibly unsettled. And if I didn't believe God had a hand behind history, I might get a little nervous. But I still believe that he does. And he still is calling the shots as to what emerges and how he wants to bring this thing to a grand conclusion. But it probably isn't the way I would want to bring it to a grand conclusion, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not some big economist, but you just look at going like, golly, we have so many huge global scale dynamics that are going on that when you just look at them from their basic framework, you're going like, what seems to be guaranteed is we're heading for massive upheaval and change. And nobody is certain or in control of those outcomes. And you're just going like, how does this, you know, figure itself out?
That's why I'm glad he is, because we really don't. Our State Department doesn't. I mean, so many of these things, you think, you know, we're really got our hand behind all these things. But these things surprise us. They come out of nowhere and people are dying and, you know, people are climbing the streets and everybody's responding to what's happening and not controlling it. So hopefully God is doing his deal. She does.
Well, aren't we also involved? I mean, I look at the whole, you know, dominion over the affairs of this planet, and it seems like a fair amount of it has been bequeathed to human beings as decision makers. I don't know that everything that's going on is just, well, I guess God's doing that. It's like, I don't know.
I'm not saying God's doing it. I'm just saying God's behind it. And God, you know, I think now human history is unfolding not by a few decisions by an elite group, but
no.
by an awful lot, millions of decisions made by individuals that kind of massed together to become some kind of movement or whatever. But as much as all this means, you know, this whole social marketing and or social networking and all that can be so destructive, I'm living in the fruit of seeing how productive it can be. I mean, I didn't plan on being on the cutting edge of some of these things back in the day when I just a writer that wanted to write some things. But because of what the internet's allowed me to do and the people it's allowed me to connect with, and just going to Austin a couple weeks ago or going up to Vancouver this weekend, and there's people that are connecting primarily because over the media. And
right.
It's just they don't know each other, and they get together and they find out, wow, like-hearted people live just down the road from me. And so I see that side of it that, again, incredibly positive. Someone doesn't have to lead it. There's lots of people, and the Facebook thing. I mean, I watch people that I know came to touch each other through some of the things that I was doing, and they've gone on with all kinds of friendship, relationship, stuff they're doing together that's way beyond anything that I even know about. And I just go by and go, I didn't know they were friends. That's cool. That just has gone on to be a wonderful friendship.
Yep.
And so I think it's all good and all bad. It's both. Again. Hopefully, you're finding a positive connection with those things. But certainly puts – I do think human decisions make a difference. But behind all that has to be God bringing history to its ultimate conclusion. If not in our lifetime, then hopefully within the next 3 or 4 centuries.
Well, it's just wild. I mean, I ran into a friend who has, for the last decade, followed the nudge of stepping out of one industry – and spending a decade of doing research trying to figure out how to grow food more productively. And they figured it out in a pretty amazing way. And you're just going like, oh my gosh. When you look at a lot of the foment that's going on, it's because all the food prices are kicking. And you're just going like, it was just fascinating to have met this guy and for a decade he's given himself to something that a lot of the people around him was like, what are you doing? And I'm looking at it going like, that's for him some brilliant wisdom in terms of going like, I see the profound relevance of what he's given himself to and the necessity of his own preparedness for something up the road. And it's kind of like wild.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Some email just for fun. We haven't done it in a while. This is from Joyce. This is about the Teddy Bear's Got a Teddy Bear podcast.
Versus Real Bear.
Yeah. See, I was reminded of Wayne's story of Sarah and the bees when you're talking about God's anger. You have to hear that on Transitions if you haven't. Just that whole demonstration of wrath. Sarah, who's allergic to bee stings, rushing into a swarm of bee stings to rescue my son, being the picture of what God's wrath really is in times of how he intervenes in history to rescue folks. He said, I came to believe that he's never, never, never angry with us, but he is angry with the darkness that causes the things that we do. The darkness comes from the broken relationship he'd established for us before the foundation of the earth, which was broken when Adam and Eve made the decision to believe the lie of the enemy rather than trust in the truth and faithfulness of God. So when we fail, whether it is in big things like bringing a country to its financial knees or small things like telling a fib, it is our lack of knowing God that causes us to do that, and God is angry at the darkness that has caused that lack of knowledge. I like that observation. The things that we get sucked into in our lives, whether it's telling a fib or acting selfishly or whatever, is that we really have lost sense of who God is and God's care for us, and therefore we're going to resort to our own tactics, which always become hurtful to other people.
Yeah.
And that God once in a while steps in to say, you know, I'm not going to let you guys do that to each other. I like when he does that. I think the most, as having been a part of so many divisive, broken relationships between Christians, I just say, you know what? There's enough pain in the world without God's followers adding to it. Just love each other. Treat each other.
We can be
like
just
you.
As confused as those that aren't naming him.
Yes. And to those who are wanting to help me through my current maladies these days. So you began your last podcast talking about people giving advice to help others who are sick. Now, this would be about three podcasts ago. And he said, this reminds me, this morning I was reading The Kingdom of Love by Hannah Hernard. Do you know her? Right, a long time ago.
Yes.
Yeah. She was telling how for years she read and studied great saints of the past and trying to overcome her personal besetting sin. She tried to do all the right things they did and all to no avail. It wasn't until she personally found from God what he revealed for her that she was able to overcome. The point is that, well, that we can certainly glean from others, and real stuff that sets us free is only found in our personal relationship with God. We are all uniquely made by him and by our life situations. Our uniqueness is a real key in living an honest, fulfilling, loving relationship with God. I don't think we can completely appreciate communion with God until we enter into the realization of how personal God has made all of us.
Well said.
I was trying to talk this weekend in Austin. I'm not sure we totally connected with this one group about it, but just saying that Larry Crabb in his book, I think it was Soul Talk, said the worst thing groups of believers do together is give each other advice.
Mm.
And everyone always said, what? I mean, what else? Wouldn't we give advice to somebody we want to love? And I'm going, you know, it's one thing to help, encourage, come alongside somebody and cheerlead them. It's another thing when somebody says, you know, I'm dealing with this, for us to say, well, you know, when I was dealing with that, this is what God did for me. You should do the same thing. And it misses that whole uniqueness thing. And what I say, it usually shuts down a group from anyone ever sharing their need again. I've watched groups, just somebody shares a need and they get about 15 bits of advice and they're all a bit different. And you're going, that's not what this person needs. They don't need 15 different approaches to this thing. What they need is people say, man, I love you. I'll be praying for you. And if God gives me some insight for you in this thing, I'll pass it on. Not, here's my little tool to pull out of my quiver, and it worked for right. me. I'm going to make it work for you.
I know it's well-intentioned, but some of the most helpful things I've ever seen in that is when someone cares enough to help process what the person may be hearing from God. Asking the relevant questions.
Yeah, opening the door to what's
that allowing that, yeah. As opposed to assuming, well, hey, well, I got this word. It's like, well, you might, but what might be far more helpful is to help that person discern what it is God might be saying by whatever source.
Yeah.
Because then that person gains the confidence that they're being communicated to. Not, I've got a word for you, brother.
And have the humility to know that how he did it in me is not likely the way he's going to do it in you, but that he's going to do it. That's where the encouragement comes in.
Why do we industrialize people's discipleship as if everyone should be on this program?
it takes less thought and gives us something to sell. How about that?
Okay.
You asked. I'm just telling you.
But yeah. I think when you look at God's seemingly desire to revel in uniqueness, we tend to try to principle things into here's 10 truths for everyone to apply.
Yeah.
And you're just going like, yeah, but it's going to look different in 10 different lives.
Never mind that it never works. It doesn't matter. Because if I give you 10 steps and you did them all, it didn't work, well, then you didn't do them right or you didn't do them enough. This is perfect. It's just the way I keep people frustrated forever. I like you. Let's just get alongside, hear what God's saying to me. I did get this suggestion, though, for what was causing problems. Someone gave me this cure. He said, I thought I'd share my. This is from Daryl in Texas. I understand that prime USDA beef, thick sliced bacon, baked potatoes, all the fixings, and chocolate chip cookies are fabulous for your neurological health. Anyway, that's my 3 cents.
Wow.
A cure I can live
with. I bet you felt a witness right there.
Well, no. I'm sure that's not helpful, but it does point out that whole idea between opinion and knowledge, you know, not being the same thing. Even preference and knowledge isn't necessarily the same thing. I wish those things were true. This from Richard on the Replacement Army. A few of them have read that book I recommended a while back. You and I may still get a chance to talk about that. I hope you have a copy now.
Yes.
Did a blog on it, though, for folks that care. But he said, one of the things of value for me is having a person write from a European perspective, which is great because Stan's from Scotland, lives in the UK. The situation of the organized church in Europe is much more perilous than the U.S. and even here in Australia, where Richard's from. Other European speakers I have heard speak in the same vein. I suspect the European experience of the organized church may well occur in Australia. At present, our governments, national and state, offload quite a little bit of community social support to various church-based social agencies, but the drift to secularism is quite likely. I keep pondering Jesus' words, I will build my church. I've seen far too much of people building their church, their organizations, their structures, and then defending them. At the expense of people I've been up close and personal to, such a focus on the structures have led to the loss of the people, who have the gift and passion for real ministry, mission, living the life of Christ in different situations. I agree with Stan that we should not expect that Jesus will necessarily renew our systems or our structures. It is him we need to connect to and with, and he will build his church his way. Cool.
Yeah, I just see the whole apple cart being upset just about everywhere.
Yeah, have you read it yet, The Replacement Army?
I haven't.
I didn't think you had. We'll get another time, but folks want to read it, we'll leave a link there so you can find it. It's actually a free PDF online, but some really interesting insights about if we're not doing it the traditional way, how is it that we might live in this time of transition? So, pretty cool. Yeah.
Worthy read.
Yeah, I wrote an article recently. In fact, Lifestream sent out a couple weeks ago a newsletter that kind of was the same vein. I was reading Stan's article, which I loved, or his book. I was on my art at the same time, the Church of Jesus is building, and getting people to rethink, you know, in this time of transition that we're in. I really think we are in a time of transition. The article begins with a question, what is the church going to look like 10 years from now? Because I get that question all the time. And people actually think I'd have an answer to it. And I don't. I don't have any clue what it's going to look like.
I don't know that you addressed it in the article here, but what do you think people are thinking when they ask that?
I think explore that question more. Most people are asking, what is it going to look like in terms of methodology? Will we be in homes doing home groups? Will we be back in more traditional congregations, but better, you know, better spirit, less tradition, work-centered, less performance treadmill? I think they're looking for a modality. I think there's that constant search for, I'll find the church when I find the right method to either I find that group or I create that group in my own locality.
Well, it's like, how is it any different than, you know, what do you think the most predominant color of car will be in 10 years? It's like, and?
And who cares? Yeah.
Well, I hear that question. It's like, you know what? The truth is no, there isn't a way to answer that. But that's almost presupposing the lack of a dialogue with going like, you know what? We're supposed to be in that journey. I don't know, short of Jesus returning, where, quote, the arrival place is. It looks like this. Well, it may, for that group of people, And that doesn't make it right or wrong or something to be copied.
Well, part of it, isn't people looking for a place to pitch a tent?
I think so, as opposed to walking on this journey, because it's like, I think God loves the uncertainty and the leaning into him that requires.
Yeah, we talked about earlier about, you know, the whole unrest in the world now being made. Some millions of decisions by thousands of people, however they're going to go on these things. They have a capacity to do that now. It's decentralized from governments. I think that's true for the church now. I think that what the church will be 10 years from now will be observable 10 years from now. Ask me that.
You know, I think you're onto something there, Jacobson.
But it's going to be what the church, how it comes about. And we're kind of, I'm enjoying a fresh group of people just God's brought around Sarah and my life here in Newbury Park, who've read some of my stuff, just got in touch. We just had some recent contact. And I have no idea what or if fellowship among those people will continue in a way. I have a sense that as we connect some and have some time together, God's going to show each person, and the combination of those insights and decisions will create an expression of the family in this area. Now, what that looks like, that's how we've always begun. Somebody, a man with a vision and a plan, and we'll all get behind it, and we're going to make something. And I'm really excited to go, I don't know. I don't know what it'll look like. It may just be people scattered in homes, a lot of networked friendships and relationships. I don't have this yearning to, I need to be part of something now to validate. But I love walking alongside other brothers and sisters. And I want to see what that looks like and what availability it might have to encourage others on a spiritual journey in the area in which I live. And it's fun to, you know, be a pilgrim in that exploration rather than the guy with a blueprint that's going to try and get everybody to fit the blueprint that I'd have in mind.
Well, yeah, I the phrase I tend to use at moments like this is, I think form follows function. And the problem you have when everyone's saying,
Is that original with you? I'm just kidding.
I don't know if it was or not. It's something I've always talked about.
Marshall McLuhan.
Oh, I don't know
famous
who that
guy.
Is.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, well, he had a great idea.
He did. And maybe you had it too.
Who cares? The reality is, I think with that, if you're always trying to figure out the form, I think sadly that may limit your discovery of what it is that God was looking to do. Because I think when all of a sudden you meet in a certain way, unfortunately, that puts serious boundaries on what it is that you're fruitfully going to be able to do. And so when people are always trying to say, well, what's it going to look like? It's like, I don't think we know yet, and I don't think we should even be asking that. I think that's a dangerous, preemptive question until you first ask, what's he asking of us?
Yeah, and I think it's a dangerous question, too, in saying that whatever that it is, once we find it, we'll do that forever. Instead of, there'll be seasons where we're going to do this. There'd be seasons of doing something else.
Yeah.
The seasons of the way God works in our lives that isn't about finding an it, because I think any group, whether it's a traditional congregation, whether it's a house church, organic church, whatever, everything gets to the point of which now it becomes a thing with a name that needs to be maintained. And all the energy to maintain it is a very different energy and almost a wasteful energy from how it is that God gave birth to something. And I've always said, I think real community is a gift God gives. I think most people I meet believe Christian community is something we can create and formulate. If we just found the right methodology, the Christian community happens. Well, I know from my 15 years being part of the leadership team of a relational network of people that were trying to find a way to do house church, home group, whatever, so that we could keep it organic in homes. We did 15 different expressions of it in 15 years trying to find the way that would work. And none of the ways work. We could do things absolutely identical, and one would just thrive with life and God grace and doing stuff, and other people just plodding along because they're committed to this meeting and they come every week, and it didn't have life in it. And I've come to this point in my life going, community is a gift God gives, and when God gives it, you know it. And the best thing we do is recognize it and slide along with it. The worst thing we do is A, try to create it, or two, when we do recognize it's a gift, we somehow take it to ourselves and think we can manage it. And then we'll end up with it in our hands long after God has moved on to some other expression of his life. So you're right. It does freeze us into something that's going to keep us from seeing what's next.
And that's where I just go like, golly, it's like our curiosity or our need to define things that are not clearly seen almost always lead us out of a dialogue. It's like, well, if I were to answer you, what does that then do? Well, now you don't need to talk to Jesus. Just go build that.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, how tragic, and how would you even know if I'm right?
Yeah. And even if our conversation shifts from, and I think many people who are trying to, quote, start a house church or start a fellowship, that almost from day one, the conversation is, what are we going to do together? And how are we going to take care of things? And who's going to be in charge? And what do we do about the children? And we're talking about the it instead of where community happens is people get together and say, what's Jesus doing in you? What's he showing you? Where are you struggling? What's your hurt? I mean, it's about the life of living in Jesus. It's not about the technique of shaping something. And I look at groups I visit around the world. People are having the conversation about what this should look like and what should we do are rarely enjoying it. And the people that are enjoying Jesus and enjoying how that unfolds and enjoying the chaos of that at times and the lack of definition in that, I said, must have been four times in Austin this weekend, if you need certainty to live this journey, you're in the wrong kingdom, because I think God really enjoys, there's so much in Scripture about the day-to-day, a city that we haven't attained yet, not pitching your tent and settling down in some good thing God's done and park yourself there and say, yeah, I'm good. I think I'll just stay with this the rest of my life. Those things always fade away. And people are still together, but the life of it is gone because it was the certainty that they loved instead of the adventure of continuing to follow him.
I don't know that it's the certainty that they loved. I think that for some people gives them the illusion of control, but I don't know that that's very fun.
I think if you haven't learned, at least want to explore what it is to live in trust, I do think the need to control is incredibly seductive to people. And no, I don't think they end up having fun with it.
You know,
but at least it's predictable.
I think those are what fearful people long to manage their fear. Is I got to find a way to control this. I don't know what to expect. I'm not anticipating that as something of joy, so I'm wanting to mitigate against all the bad outcomes that might. And it's like, I think God does the uncertainty thing by design because I think he's trying to build in the necessity of relationship, one with him and two with each other. Because if I got a mission and I got a purpose and a plan and it's not a result of a dialogue and we make the assumption, oh, we're brought together for this, well, I'll impose it on you. And there's not a lot of life for both of us in that.
There's no life. Yeah, exactly. But people seem, it's like that old gotta have a king thing. It's the way the rest of the world works. You just have a way of doing, you have rules and decision-making. It's clear. People come and it'll all be good.
Yuck.
But the point is, yeah, the point is really yuck.
It's like the world is throwing away their kings.
Ahead of the right. Well, they threw away their royalty and long before the religious institutions are still holding on to theirs.
I know. I mean, I look at that and I go like, gosh, all this uncertainty, who knows? And it's like, well, what is the answer? Well, the answer is press into Jesus and go, Lord, I haven't a clue what to do, but I figure if anyone has a vantage point on this, you do.
Yeah, when you look at the life of Jesus, when I do, I go, where did Jesus ever plan a meeting and invite people to a group? He never controlled the environments in which he found himself. He would go to the environments where people already were. If there was a mob of crowd there, it was a woman at a well. He didn't set up an office somewhere and invite people to come. He didn't set up a Sunday morning service and go, come here.
So
it's amazing to me.
So let me ask the stupid question.
There are no stupid questions, according to my wife.
Why in the world for some forever long time is that what is predominantly done?
I think it's back to what you say. It's control. It's comfort and control in a false illusion of security. I really do think people prefer that to the adventure of, man, I don't know what's next church-wise for me. I'm just going to hang out with Jesus, and I'm going to see who he connects me to. I'm going to see what happens. most people don't even think that way, want that. They really want to go to something nice, planned, organized. Nobody's going to jump out of a window and do anything strange.
You know what I found? I found when I am in whatever setting, if I am with someone that seems really good at what they're doing, it is so fun to dial back and not have to be in charge, but to be able to go along on that journey without the impulses of micromanaging the moment and just going, wow, when you have that sense that there's someone directing this that does know what they're doing, that's a thrill. Those are fun. Adventures, whitewater rafting, and you got someone in the boat that knows what they're doing. That's an exhilaration.
It is, but here's the other danger. You're on a whitewater rafting trip, and someone thinks they know what they're doing. And they take
That's not so much fun.
And they take
that's
command of
dangerous.
The boat. Well, I think that's why people go, okay, I want something more secure because I don't want the wacko. And I get this from a lot of community groups learning just to love and fellowship.
That's why home groups are dangerous.
They can be. Where somebody comes in and goes, oh, God has sent me here to organize this. Or God has, and or they just, because it's just, hey, brothers and sisters sharing. And somebody starts coming and saying, I've got something to teach you now. And it's the person in the room that's least on this journey. And people go, what do we do about that? Do we just throw them out? And I'm going, you know, you don't throw them out. You just have a whole lot of honesty. You just sit, even when they say, whoa, hold on. What are you doing? Well, God gave me something to teach us. Well, could we decide that instead of you? Why don't you? What is that you think God wants us to know? A minute and a half total. Now, we'll say, gosh, do we want to hear more on that or don't we? I think that would make that so self-pruning. But again, it's all the risk.
Most people have never seen that kind of moment with that kind of honesty when someone sort of breaks that awkwardness by just saying, hey, wait a minute.
And it only works, quite honestly, if most of us are willing to do it. Otherwise, you just end up with a leader again. The one guy who's willing to stand up and call you out. And it's got to be the rest of the group be able to say, whoa, hold a minute. What are you doing?
See, that's where our culture and all of its political correctness has really kind of neutered anyone's capacity to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute. And if you're the guy that does that, well, then you're the argumentative one. And everyone sits back going like, fight. Just going like, yuck.
I liked in Australia when there were somebody would say, and be different people, somebody would say, are we all on this page? And you could look around, people going, no, I'm being rescued here. And people really actually like being rescued. But it gives the whole group a chance to talk about, yeah, is this what we're about together? Or are we being hijacked? And I think endlessly the body of Christ has been hijacked by would-be leaders who want to form a building, a network, and it's usually somebody that wants to make a living off the rest of the people.
Yeah, see, I think that's why when Jesus said, you know, hey, don't call yourself father, don't call yourself teacher, don't take on the title leader. I think he was getting at this stuff because, you know, when I go like the exhilaration of being able to follow someone that knows what they're doing, I look at that as the ultimate answer is I'm following Jesus. I really think he's capable of guiding my life. That really removes this need for me to micromanage everything. I don't know what's happening. I don't know where security is found. I don't know what decisions to make to ensure that those things won't touch my life. I don't know how to do any of that. But I feel really secure that he loves me. And that he's guiding me and I'm leaning in. And that allows me to have a better sense of enjoying this adventure than I did years ago when I didn't have a confidence about that.
Yeah, when I was doing it for him, because I not only didn't have a confidence he would, I was pretty confident he wouldn't. If we didn't, he wouldn't. So we were doing all that managing. Now, I don't trust any of that management. What I trust is people who are willing to get in a circumstance, listen to the nudge of the Holy Spirit, walk with those God's called you to walk beside for a given season of your life. God begins to bring other people in your life. Be free to do that. I trust those decisions made inside the freedom of a walk with Jesus more than I trust anybody's system of arrangement or management style. It's going to put a group together and make rules about what we can and can't do, when we are going to are not going to get together, what we're going to do when we get together, not get together. If friendships grow first instead of a meeting, then I think that's much more what a family looks like. A family that's healthy, it's driven, or not driven is probably even the best word, but its life together is found in the health of the relationships involved. Mm-hmm. Families don't need meetings. They gather all the time. Healthy family, people are going to be cared for. Needs are going to be known. People are going to touch. But among my family, if one brother comes in and is going to teach an hour-long sermon at a family get-together, I think most of us are going, who are you kidding? Shut up, pass the chicken, and let's move on. And I do think where religion has worked so well is removing that sense from our hearts that God is able to lead us into life. And he's able to connect us where he wants to connect us. And therefore, I've got to find something to implement or something to join to get that sense of belonging and that sense of the church. I am absolutely confident today Jesus is building his church. And because of some of these social networking things, God has the ability to connect people across miles and across years of history with each other. Now, I'm not talking about past lives. I'm just saying people that you knew 20 years ago that lives 1,000 miles away and you reconnect somewhere. And out of that, God begins to move and do things and knits the family together. I think that's beautiful. And I don't trust the things that we would do now and all the books that are sold to give us a management system. Hey, I know I could write that book next week, and I know it would sell well. If you give people, here's the method for the church. A lot of people go try and do it. But it's not where life is, and it's not going to work.
Well, I think what's unfortunately happens, I think religion has given us this assumed list of responsibilities that we all must do. Therefore, you have to gather so as to do those things. And it's like, wait a minute, I think that's presupposing something. I don't know that God has asked those people, you must do this. Has he asked you? Because I think so much of our religious impulse is trying to respond to the assumed guilt of non-activity.
Yeah. And the old sense of eldership are those who are willing to plan those activities and get people in line with certain obligations.
Yeah.
And I think the new sense of what God's raising up among eldering people is when I see people who struggle with real body life because they don't trust Jesus to pull it together in his way, in his time, then I spend time with those people, not creating a system to backstop their lack of trust. But I build a relationship with them to help them discover what it is to trust God in the same way, so they won't need that. And the elders I see in the family now as I travel around the world are not people who are trying to create and manage stuff, but they're people that are willing to spend time with people who have no trust, helping them learn how to begin to live inside a relationship with Jesus where they do begin to trust him, and then they can live with greater freedom and better joy in the context of that life.
Yeah, and I think when you come to realize that we really do have just one shepherd, and it isn't, well, who's he delegated that to? It's no. I don't know that there's a single gathering, a single group, a single thing that doesn't have him as the real, true one shepherd. Then I don't have to be afraid of the Yahoo in the front of the boat that's trying to take over. Because every boat's got one.
If not, they'll find their way to one.
Yeah, they'll swim across and climb aboard. And I don't know how you guard against that other than being secure in the fact that, that's the shepherd and it ain't us.
Yeah, and I think real people who love each other, there's no room for that. I really think the honesty, the authenticness of real people just, it stops it. And where that's not there, where people are just looking for a tool, yeah, you're a sitting duck, either to be a victim of that or to think you need that and try and follow it. In time, the emptiness will show you that, yeah. And what happened, I know we had a group in which there was a very strong single lady that was kind of taking control of the thing, and I was pretty much at the place of, I mean, just, and not take control like she wanted to lead it, but her need would just overwhelm everybody else in the room every meeting. And people are going to say, when are you going to stop her? And I said, I'm not until you guys do something. And they were like, we're not going to do anything. I said, if I ain't going to do anything, I'm not going to do anything this time. Because I think if it's just me making a rule, then I'm de facto the leader of this group. So if you're uncomfortable with what she's doing, then you either have her over for dinner some evening and you talk to her about it, or in the middle of a meeting you stop and say, well, hold it a minute. Are we sure we want to spend the whole night on this tonight again? And you just begin to gently, lovingly help her see. Because I had great compassion for this single woman, quite frankly. She had been raped and got pregnant and raised a daughter on her own. And, I mean, what she had gone through was a tough, tough life. And her being kind of sucking all the light out of the room was just the extent of her need. But until somebody was going to address that with her personally so that God would begin to fill that place in her life, just making a rule to change the group. And so I think real eldership now gets to a place, men and women, of when I find somebody who's difficult to be around, I realize that's because they don't know the Jesus I know. Can I help them get to know him? If I can help them get to know him, great. If I can't, then you've got to have the harder conversation, which is, you know, we're not all here to orbit around your need. Your need is important as other people's are who are here. But it's not the only need, and we need you to lighten up a little bit when you're with us. No one else is willing to have that conversation. What people rather do is people just stop coming. They just drop out.
Go, yeah, it self-selects itself to nothing.
And then people get the community they deserve. So it's perfect.
Traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.